Hello, and welcome to the Transcending CRM podcast, a show where we explore how the Salesforce ecosystem has impacted the careers of fellow trailblazers and the businesses that have leveraged dynamic growth from the platform. This podcast is brought to you by Silverline. Silverline is a Salesforce digital transformation consultancy headquartered in New York City, specializing in financial services, media and entertainment, and healthcare industries. I am your host, Elliot Spence, principal consultant at Silverline, along with my co-host, JP Owens, Managing Director of Banking and Lending at Silverline. Today, we are joined by Ali Vaughn. Ali is an 11-time Salesforce Certified Marketing Cloud Solution Architect with Kelly Austin. Ali was also a competitor recently in the FlowFest competition, so I'm sure we're going to have a lot of great conversation around that as well. Welcome to the show, Ali. So to get us started, tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you got started on the platform. Just let our listeners know a little bit more about you and your career with Salesforce.
Yeah, so I started in Salesforce kind of by accident. I think that happens often, right? So the concept of an accidental admin was really my experience. So my previous career was in the insurance industry for a very long time, working for a large carrier. I took a break for a little while. I went to work for my family. And then I got back into insurance at the independent agency level. So that agency just happened to purchase Salesforce and Marketing Cloud and a managed package on top of that. So I was kind of thrown into it. I had the most knowledge around technology. I was already running some operations for the agency and looking at the pieces of their tech stack to figure out what do we cut, what do we keep. And then Salesforce came along and I just kind of fell into this role where I automatically had to start administering the core side and then moving along the marketing side, right? So Marketing Cloud is a beast. Salesforce at the time to me was also like very, very intimidating. I remember my first time on Trailhead and I read, it was like one of the basic Trailheads. And I was reading about this concept of objects and fields. And I remember thinking, why am I doing this? Like, what is this? What have I gotten myself into? I can't understand it. And I said, I don't like the way that this learning happens. I don't get it. And then I just kept forcing, you know, you have to do it, right? This is your role. It's your job. And if you don't move it forward, no one else is. So the endeavor will ultimately fail. So of course, you know, I kept at it and I kept looking at it and reading through it and practicing it. And eventually things started to click. And my big thing was automation. I loved flow. So flow is really how I started to love Salesforce and then really get back into the Trailheads, start understanding what they were telling me and doing more and more and more. So again, I got in accidentally, but from the beginning, I've always kind of straddled the line between Marketing Cloud and the core side, building automations in both. So that's kind of the beginning for me. And I ended up going to a consulting firm after about a year or so working at the agency, and I've been at a couple of consulting firms since. So I've had, you know, kind of a lot of experience in different projects and growth in a very small amount of time.
Yeah, absolutely. The concept of the accidental admin, I feel like that's a theme for a lot of us. And I know I fell into it with, you know, JP kind of reaching out to me like, hey, we have this, we're starting up Salesforce. Do you want to jump in? And, you know, your background kind of matches what we're doing. I know JP's experience was kind of falling into it as well. Our career paths, well, not necessarily career paths, but it all happened the same where I jumped into Trailhead and then I started learning about all the automation. Flow was one of the most intimidating things for me at first. And then it just all, and I'm sure it happens with everybody, where it all just kind of one day just clicks and it's like, oh, this makes sense. And so does this concept. And then you just, the ball just starts rolling from there. And yeah, I had the same experience when I started jumping into like Trailhead and Flow. So it's one and the same.
Yeah, I will say, like, I can't really talk about my entry into Salesforce without giving a lot of credit to the people that I was working with and around at the time. I don't know if I would have caught on or found the love for it if I hadn't had this close network of people. And by that, I mean, I was the only person at the agency who was doing what I was doing, but the managed package that was purchased had a group of independent agents that also purchased it. And we were this team, this disconnected team, you know, all different companies. They were technically could be competitors, right? Because some of their territories overlapped, but they were all going through the same transformation in the independent insurance field where it's like, okay, now we have Salesforce, but we don't know how to use it. or what it's for, or what it could do for us, and how we can like maximize our potential and, you know, take care of our customers. Nobody knew how to use this thing. Same with Marketing Cloud. How do we use our data to get those touch points out? And we were all learning together. So I was part of groups of people at the same time learning the same thing. So we had super user groups and I would head up those, and it was like four or five of us. And we would just start playing around and start building things that we could show other people. So having that kind of a group, and I see it when I'm on LinkedIn and I see the Slack channels, there are these groups that are happening organically, like not just with accidental admins, but just out in the ecosystem. There are all these groups available to anybody who wants to start, and you can just join it and start making stuff and building. And that's, I think that's the coolest thing, is if you build something now, odds are you can ask hundreds of people and you will get a lot of responses back, just feedback on what you've done. I don't really know another industry that you can take that kind of immediate feedback and learning and just like catapult yourself. And I think that's what's so intriguing to me about the Salesforce world.
Learning that way and doing a lot of the show and tell. I mean, we talked a little bit about how Elliot and I fell into it. So like yourself, like maybe I started in marketing first. I think the first tool I got access to was ExactTarget. And it's like, hey, we send out batch emails. Our subscriber keys are a mess. What could we do to automate things around mortgage pre-qualification journeys and things like that? And this was before Trailhead. And I was like, well, let me watch some YouTube videos. I'll figure out ways to build some dynamic content, load up an SFTP file, trigger out some things that might be based on cycle codes or things like that that were important for personalization. And those were huge accomplishments then. And then shortly after that, we found out like, hey, we also own Salesforce. They're owned by the same company. What else could we do with it? And I find it rare in the ecosystem today, especially on the consulting side, to find someone who's comfortable as a Marketing Cloud architect, as well as a Salesforce architect. And I get the sense from you that you are pretty comfortable there. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about how has that evolution been for you? And any tips for someone around whether or not they should kind of look to be a champion of both and really comfortable in both? And maybe how did you learn? Because they are different systems and it does require a different learning skill set as well.
It does. They're two different beasts, and they both have their own like unique idiosyncrasies that you just like Marketing Cloud. I feel like I have to, you know, I got to be nice to you so that you do what I want you to do. And I'm not watching like the spinny wheel over and over and over again. So, you know, in the beginning of my journey with Salesforce, I was told by a colleague who's still a friend of mine today. She said, okay, if you're good at Salesforce and you're also good at Marketing Cloud, you're a unicorn. And I'm like, well, that's what I want to be. I want to be a unicorn. And I was lucky enough to have access to both platforms, licenses to both. I could get in there and play and build whatever I wanted. It was great. I did this for a while. So I would build solutions and I would build, you know, journeys and flows inside of both of these systems for a while. And then the problem that I found was expertise, right? So how do I truly become what I am comfortable calling, you know, an expert? And that could be, maybe you're never an expert, right? Maybe it's something that's a lifelong goal, but I need to work towards something specific. So just recently, when I took the Marketing Cloud, what am I? A Marketing Cloud Solution Architect with Kelly Austin. When I took that role, that was my pivot moment where I said, I am going to devote what I'm doing now to Marketing Cloud, because I had like half my projects in core, half in Marketing Cloud. And I felt like I was constantly going back and forth and back and forth. And to really get good at something, I needed to focus on one. And that was my choice. So if someone were to ask me, I wouldn't do it differently. I would say having experience in both is great. But when you get to the point where you need that dedicated time to really get good at solutionizing, one is kind of enough. You know what I mean? Like at some point, if you dedicate too much time to one, the other starts to slip. And so I had to make a choice.
That's awesome. Yeah, I do. I would agree. Unicorn. We don't find many people who are comfortable in both. And it's almost like a line is drawn in the sand. We're like, hey, I do Salesforce. I don't want to mess around in Marketing Cloud. But to your point on having access to both is something not a lot of people get the chance to do. I mean, being an admin of both systems is, I'd say, a rare thing in most organizations right now as well.
It's almost scary in a way, right? Because who's going to back check you? You know, that's always the concern. Like somebody's got to be there to like kind of govern this situation. I really like Marketing Cloud because I can play in both playgrounds, right? So I do a lot with Marketing Cloud Connect and Salesforce integration. That's my wheelhouse and what I enjoy, using synchronized data extensions into journeys and whatnot. But I find I chose Marketing Cloud as my focus because I know that you can't really do it well without having a good foundation and like recent practice on the core side. So if I'm solutionizing, I can pull that into, well, on core, here's what I need. And here's how I can see that working out. And even if I'm not building it, I can still relay that vision to whoever is going to build it inside of the client's Salesforce core.
Yeah, it does make you more dynamic, and you definitely know more about what you need and how to potentially get there. And as a Marketing Cloud consultant, I guess this is a two-part question. What is one of your favorite products within the Marketing Cloud stack you enjoy working with? And what is one of the most impactful implementations that you see happen over and over again? And I'll give like a frame, like normally onboarding is a pretty big impactful program we'll implement in financial services quite a bit. But from your perspective, favorite product to work with right now, and what is one of the key things that you find most valuable to clients that you implement in one of their initial projects?
Yeah, a lot of the projects that I work with, again, are around that Marketing Cloud Connect, the integration, pulling the synchronized data extensions in, and then really being able to personalize the journey. So Journey Builder and Automation Studio are where I spend most of my time. I'm really interested in getting into CDP. So that's on my QBR list of things that I need to get into for this quarter. And I'm looking forward to that. But that's really where, you know, that's really where I live. Custom preference centers are also of interest to me because it's really anything that can connect to or is intended to connect back to Salesforce core. So there's a theme here, right? So if I can keep that connection and impact, you know, on the core side, that's really what I find the most interest in.
Awesome. So jumping around a little bit, we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, you were recently in FlowFest as a competitor, which is, you know, there's a lot out there about it. A lot of people applied. Just being selected, it says a lot about you because, you know, they're very selective of who's even a competitor. So what was your experience in that? And, you know, what was the application process like? Did you have to submit something in order to be selected? And then what was the experience like as a FlowFest competitor? What did you do in that?
Yeah. So let's see, there have been three now, right?
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah. So this was FlowFest 3. So I had applied to 1 and 2, and I was not selected for 1 and 2 because there's only 200 competitors that get selected
worldwide, it's huge that you were in it. It's awesome.
Yeah. I was super excited I was going through a transition of roles. I went from one company to another company, and my acceptance email went to my old email address. So I hadn't received it. And I thought, okay, well, maybe it's there. And I still had access. It was about a week after I had left my other role, and I still had access to my Gmail. And so I logged in, and there it was, like at the top of my inbox, that I had been accepted. I had seen on LinkedIn, you know, all of the normal guys that are on there, normal guys and gals that are in FlowFest that have done this the last, you know, two times. And I say, oh, I was accepted again, or oh, I was accepted for the first time. And I'm thinking, man, what do I got to do? Three times, like no acceptance. And so when I saw that email, I was super, super excited. As far as application wise, I didn't have to submit one. It was just registering on the site. So I don't know. I don't have any insight into like what they look for and who they accept into that program or that competition. But either way, I felt really happy that they did end up accepting me. So in the challenge itself, you have like 55 minutes, and then they give you 5 challenges to do. Half of them you have to build from scratch, around like 2 or 3 you have to build from scratch. And then there are 2 where you have to go in and fix the flow. So it's like very limited information. They may give you 1 or 2 paragraphs, and based on the information they give you, you go in and you either create or fix. This time, well, I'm hoping to be in more, but for my first time, I completed 4. I did not complete them in the 55 minutes. So at 55 minutes, I probably was halfway through my 4th. And there was one I kept pushing back. I kept pushing back because when I was reading the requirements for it, I kept thinking, this needs an apex action, but we're not allowed to use one. And I was like, you know, so I just kept pushing it. I'm like, if I have time later, I'm going to do it. And I pushed it out a little too far because I just didn't go back to it. And I did afterwards. So I brought this back to my team at Kelly Austin, and we have got like a Weeby Flow in channel. And so we go through like, here's what I did. Here's what I built. What do you think? And I remember pulling an engineer into that 5th one. I was like, what do you think about this? And it took her like 2 or 3 hours to puzzle through. She did several iterations of it and finally did one that executed flawlessly on the first try. And it involved multiple loops. And I'm thinking, no, apex action. I said, would you recommend this? Yeah. She's like, no, it's best in apex action. So that I still, to this day, I'm like, best practice on that one should have been apex action. Shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really fun. It was very intense, but honestly, since we're not on camera, way better. Right. So I could kind of get in my head again, put my headphones on, listen to my music and just do the thing. So it was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, it looks awesome. And like you said, it is always like the same group of people. So I was wondering what the selection process is like, because you do always see like the same people that are very big within the Salesforce community with Flow and things like that. So, you know, kudos to you for being selected. That's awesome. I was watching as a competitor or as a visitor. So it was cool to see more on Flow. Obviously, it's with every release, there's more and more coming with Flow. This most recent Winter 23 workflow rules are done. You can't build them anymore. You can edit existing, activate, deactivate existing, manage packages can still come with workflow rules and things like that, but we can't build them. It's, you know, process builder and Flow. Process builder will soon go away. But with Flow, what are some of the things Winter 23, have you looked into the recent release and anything that, you know, kind of piqued your interest and you're like, oh, that's really cool. I like how we can do that now with Flow.
Yeah. I mean, from a like overall value to the whole endeavor of Flow, I think having the in and out operator is huge. Like marrying that with your ability to have a formula in your record, in your start element, right? Between those two things, we're starting to really like lessen that gap between having to program something with code and having to do it declaratively. So I think those two together are probably the biggest two pieces to really advance where Flow is going. Now, the ones that I tend to rely on that I like the most are from the summer release, and it's the cut and paste. I just absolutely love the cut and paste. I didn't think I was going to. Honestly, I was like, it's a little thing. But it's those little things that, you know, you do this all the time, and making it so easy to just move an element is huge. So
well, yeah, before cut and paste, you'd have to copy and paste it. And then if that's referenced elsewhere before you can delete that, then you get to go back and mess with your variables, and it's time consuming. So it makes it, that little piece makes it so much more easy. I like for this release how you can update records of records like child records and things like that from the, yeah. So you don't have to do additional get records each time. So yeah, with every release, they're making it just much, much more easy to use Flow and making it just for the typical admin, where back in the day when it was Flow Design or whatever, when it was just intimidating to me and I was like, I don't know if I'll be able to do this. And it just looks scary. So it's just so much more easy now.
So I have to ask you, are you auto layout or are you freeform?
Auto layout.
Yeah.
Auto layout, unless I need to, well, cut and paste makes it easier for me to not have to switch back to auto or to freeform, because that's where I used to do. I used to switch back to freeform to reorganize everything without having to redo all the variables.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm also auto layout. I was really not for a very long time. I loved the idea of freeform. I made a butterfly out of my very first Flow, you know, just being able to add that artistic element to the logic behind it. Right. But as they got, you know, I kept doing this over and over and over again. I really rely on that auto layout quite often. I love the organization of it.
Yeah. It's just way more clean.
Agreed. Yeah.
Allie, as you've moved from a Salesforce admin, we'll call it in industry, to now a consultant, How have things changed for you in regards to how you approach problems and how you come up with solutions ultimately for your clients?
Yeah, there was a big shift. So, you know, my being on customer side obviously coincided with my entry into Salesforce ecosystem, right? So all the mistakes that you might have as a beginner inside of Salesforce or as an admin in general, I made those mistakes on customer side, right? So I built flows that were inefficient and massive. They worked, but it not sustainable, right? Not scalable. As I've gotten further along in my journey and gone on to the consultant side and been able to network with people who are better than me, and me being able to learn from people who are better than me, which is really what I wanted as I've moved different to my different firms, right? I've been looking for, I don't want to be the only person who knows what I'm doing in the place where I'm at currently. So having those experiences and doing all the research and study behind some of the certifications I've gotten, it's really broadened my perspective on how I approach problems in general, because now when I look at before on client side, when I looked at a problem, it was, what is the fastest way to get from A to B? Like, how can I do this as soon as possible to get the result for my boss, you know, to get this out there and people using it. And now when I approach a problem, it's not just about how can I get this to work right now? It's about how is somebody going to maintain it? How can I scale it? What's the most efficient way to build this? And it's just a better way to look, you know what I mean? So you can build something that lasts rather than something that confuses the heck out of somebody else when they eventually have to change it.
Yeah, I think that's very, very important. I think we talk about that all the time internally as well as with our clients, is our approach ideally is to do this in a scalable way where hopefully your team can pick it up or we can enable you to do it. We don't want to come in and develop all kinds of things that is going to make it harder to navigate going forward. So declaratively doing these things and also thinking about scalability, about where the client is going, and like long-term change management and tech debt is always a key part to the process. So it's fun to hear some of the painful stories that we've all had back when we were doing this on the client side as an admin or something back in the day. So we could almost have a whole segment on that maybe.
I was going to say, I think we all have those stories if we think back like, ooh, gosh, did I really do that? Like, I remember that one. Like, yes. Yeah, that's all part of the learning curve.
And you're like, oh my God, I'm going to get fired. Yeah, it's tough.
Allie, were you able to attend Dreamforce this year? I know we're recording this a couple weeks after Dreamforce. So how was your experience this year? And anything fun you want to highlight?
Okay, so I was able to attend. It was my first time in San Francisco alone, right? And that just in general, and my first time at Dreamforce. I took away from that I need to better prepare for the next time I am there. Being in a sea of people, first off, it was like super intense. Everybody loves Salesforce. When I was back in insurance, right? I was in the claims world. I managed bodily injury claims. When I would go anywhere and talk to anybody and they asked me what I'd do and we'd have a conversation about maybe something that had happened in the claims world, it's like eyes glaze over, people start sleeping, they don't care. Nobody ever wants to talk about insurance, right? But with Salesforce, so many people are passionate about it that being in an environment like that, where everybody is just driven towards that same thing, it's just the coolest feeling. So I really enjoyed it, but I would say I need to prepare more because there's so much being offered and so many people and only so many spaces, right? So you really have to make sure you know exactly what you want to see and how to get there and what location it's at, because I wasn't prepared for that. And for Moscone to have like all of these different, I should have studied the map honestly before going, and I did not, but I think that was a challenge for me.
I can't remember if this is my third or fourth Dreamforce, but I've been there. You know, I know what it's like. And I mean, this was only 40,000 people as opposed to the last time it was in person when I know JP and I were both there. It was 170,000. It's nuts. But I'm like, experiences too. I know what to pack. I know to bring comfortable shoes. And I thought I brought comfortable shoes. And the afternoon of the it was the second to last day, I went and bought shoes because I was like, these are not comfortable enough. And I mean, you're walking, you know, 20 to 30,000 steps a day, easy, like walking around the Dreamforce campus and everything. So yeah, it's definitely something to prepare for. And people, you see it on LinkedIn, you see it on Twitter, people are posting like, here's what you should pack, here's what you need. And you just like, if it's your first time going, you just kind of brush it off like, whatever. Like, but no, it's very serious as far as here's what you pack, here's what you do, here's, you know, getting your sessions. But yeah, it was nice for it. You know, it was nice that it's back in person and seeing everybody and seeing the community. And yeah, it's definitely a different world and an experience. If you work in Salesforce as an admin, as a product owner, as anything, you got to experience at least one time and get out there.
I just love that Elliot can't remember how many he's gone to. So yeah.
I do remember my first time. I brought so much stuff home from there that I got fined, not fined, but I had to pay the weight. Yeah. The extra fee for my bag to get it home. And that's with, I won a drone. And when I was out there, and that's with them shipping the drone to my house. Yeah. I brought a lot of stuff back.
I got minimal. I got to tell you, when I went, I tried to get to the trading post, I think on the last day when everyone else also needed to get to the trading post on the last day to buy like the little, you know, buy the swag. You could go to that trading post and buy the swag and the, you know, pins and stuffed animals. I wanted to get some of those for the kids, but the line was, I think, woven like four times around outside the door. So I didn't actually get to go there. So I had minimal swag, but that's okay. I'm looking forward to next time. I will bring an extra suitcase.
For sure. So other than getting to Dreamforce, if you had one piece of advice, you know, throughout your Salesforce journey you've had so far, if there's one piece of advice you would give to somebody new that's coming into the Salesforce ecosystem, whether it be as an admin, product owner, consultant, Well, I'm just new to the Salesforce ecosystem. What's one piece of advice you would give to them?
So I think there would be a couple of pieces, right? So, and they work together. So one is to make sure you build your community, and whether that is a, you know, an in-person physical community or whether that's a digital community. What I did when I was first starting out is I identified those people on LinkedIn, on Facebook as well, who are really into Salesforce and the things that I was into, right? And I just joined the groups. I joined a ton of community groups. Like, I've got one in Phoenix. I've got one in Canada. There's one in Australia that I can never make the meetings for Marketing Cloud because I'm always asleep at that time, right? But really getting all of these influencers to come up on your feed, right? So you add them and you start seeing the content that they post. I look at LinkedIn, like LinkedIn is great for professional networking, but there's so much knowledge that is shared on that platform. And so getting involved, making sure your LinkedIn is up to date, making sure that you're following the people who are sharing content, that's huge, number one. And number two is not to be afraid to like fail and suck and ask questions. I think a lot of folks come in here, and I know I did in the beginning, wanting to be perfect, but you're never going to be perfect at a system that is this big, right? You're never going to know everything, and really owning that you don't know everything and being able to ask questions and ask for help and find those resources. If you have to get something done, you don't know how to do it, research it, and then start asking people that you know and connect with. So those are things that I think people hesitate to do. And then it's analysis by paralysis.
I couldn't agree more on the community part. That's made a huge impact for me. And that's why, you know, I stepped in as trying to lead the Cincinnati user group, or being one of them, and then being not afraid to fail. I mean, that's because you're not going to be perfect. You're going to make so many mistakes. Even think, like I said, thinking back about, oh, did I build that? It worked, but did it really work? I don't know. But, you know, things like that. I mean, that's how you're going to grow in the ecosystem and grow your career.
All right, Ellie, last question. We like to ask all of our guests to share a fun fact about yourself that not many people know. It could be an accomplishment, a talent, a fun, or almost unbelievable story.
Oh God, I feel like I'm such a boring person. I know I'm not, but I feel like I'm such a boring person. Like, what would be good enough? I guess a fun fact about me is you remember American Idol?
Yeah.
All right, scale that down about 100. And I went to a little college here, you may know it, called Xavier University. Great basketball team, or at least it was really good when I went there.
Oh, they're still good.
They're still, okay, good, good. I don't really follow, but we had a Xavier Idol when I was in college and I won.
Oh, did you really?
I did. I won, and I won a trip to New York City with the theater group. It was a blast. It was terrifying. I'd never do it again, but...
Well, I'm gonna go ahead and write that down in my notes. That
is there Allie video will be, footage?
Allie there, will be singing at one of the next Cincinnati user group meetings.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sure. Sure. Maybe after a couple of vodkaritas.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Yeah, it's one of the. I would have never have known that. Yeah. So we're gonna put that in as a user group meeting topic upcoming.
Oh boy. Okay.
Yeah, so we're wrapping up. We appreciate you taking time to join us here, but how can our listeners find you on social media, follow you and your Salesforce journey and some of the knowledge that you're putting out there?
Yeah, so I'm on Trailhead, so I've got a Trailblazer profile, and then I'm on LinkedIn. As far as Facebook and Instagram and all the other social media channels, it's a little bit like beyond me, right? I don't really participate in any of those, but I'm on LinkedIn and I am on Trailhead.
Awesome. Well, Allie, again, thank you for taking time to join us. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review. To learn more about Silverline, you can subscribe to Silverline's blog at silverlinecrm.com or follow on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook at SilverlineCRM. One word. Thank you again for joining us today, and we'll see you on the next show.